Hey guys, welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and with me is Deb Romero, certified Alexander Technique instructor. So today's topic is Newton's second law of motion. We're going to look at how that relates directly to internal and external forces that we encounter when we ride. So rider balance has a lot to do with internal forces, but then when we straddle a horse and start walking around, we're dealing with a lot of external forces. But sort of understanding these laws of motion and looking at how they might apply to us directly when we ride can really help us rethink how we can still use traditional techniques and exercises and aids, but shifting our perspective to force management rather than just these sort of conditioned responses or cues or something our horse is supposed to figure out. We can really work with the body and the laws of motion to create better balance in ourselves, better balance in our horses. And each one of us has this incredibly unique experience of that. No two people do it exactly the same way, just like no two horses balance exactly the same way. So with Newton's second law of motion, it states that force equals mass times acceleration. And I wrote down a couple of things from websites I visited. One was, which I don't get this, and maybe you get this, Deb, but I wrote it down anyways because I didn't quite get it. But I'm quoting, the time rate of change of the momentum of a body is equal in both magnitude and direction to the force imposed on it.
Okay. Yeah, if you're sitting and somebody asks you to stand up, there's a timing all that occurs. But what if somebody put their hand on your back and you had that external force? The timing is going to be different with that external force on there than not. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. And okay. You think that's what that means?
That's how I translate it. Okay. That
because the second quote made more sense to me. That Newton's second law of motion, force equals mass times acceleration, is a quantitative description of the changes that a force can produce on the motion of a body. That one made a lot more sense to me. And that's sort of what you're saying too, by putting your hand.
That external force.
External force.
And then we create the internal forces to manage that external force. Good or bad. Good or bad.
Right. So as a rider, I don't think we think very often that we are force in motion. We are.
Mass and force. Yeah.
Yeah. So force equals mass times acceleration. So our body size and our weight is our mass. That's what mass is. It has a size and it has a weight. Then acceleration really fascinated me because I go, we can accelerate. We can walk, trot, or run. We can sit and stand. We can swim. We can accelerate our body. So how do we do that? And then I went, so we change our muscle tone and use our muscles in different ways to generate acceleration of the body. So those are the internal forces that make our whole body become a force on the back of a horse. Right. So yes. When I sort of started researching acceleration and I was trying to tie that into what does that mean in a living body, I came across something called muscle velocity. And I went, and I always have to keep looking up these words because they have specific meanings. So momentum of a body equals mass times velocity. And I go, okay, what's velocity? Velocity is a specific, is a speed in a specific direction. So we're, it kind of overlaps. Like the more I tried to really pin down the meaning of these different words that we use that are used in physics and used in science, I went, okay, so force is a vector quality that always has direction and magnitude, but it's the mass times the acceleration that equals the force. So that's the velocity. So what does all of this mean to us? And it started to take on more meaning when, like, velocity of just is, again, another sort of term to describe speed. Acceleration describes speed. Magnitude sort of describes the amount of force. But velocity is just like a rate of change or speed or the time it takes to affect a change in a specific direction or when we change direction. So I went, wow, so there's such a thing as muscle velocity, which is the speed at which a muscle changes length coupled with the force of the contraction. So the force times the velocity equals the power of the muscle. And I went, oh, I just love scratching at these words and finding out what they really mean when it comes to what we feel or how we use our body every day. So anything you want to add to that? Because I went, ah, it's sort of the, like, how quick we grab the reins or how slowly can really influence the forces that we feel. Well, it's just like a horse that takes a nosedive and snatches the bit. We feel all that force against our body that might come through the reins, but it could jerk us forward right out of the saddle. So right. when they slam their head down quickly, we feel all that force generated by the horse's body. But when we're giving aids, if we're clamping our legs together, like we're squeezing a tube of toothpaste, right? We could be adding a lot of power or force and pushing inward on the horse. And how does that teach them to go forward? It's like, if we just make a vice grip out of our legs, how does that really direct them anywhere? Because the direction.
I like that question better, because what about the horse that resists that and goes backwards?
Right.
When you give, you know, I mean, you don't know really which direction it's got to be. So I'm curious about, we've talked about when we did the umwelt about, you know, how sensitive horses are right in the area where our leg is.
Yes.
And that's really, you know, a sensitive spot for them to get information from us.
Absolutely. And so when we're clamping in with both of our legs, thinking we're asking them to go forward, they could just be accidentally going forward because they don't like the squeeze of our leg.
Yes.
They could go backwards. But my point about it is it lacks a direction. The direction is wrong. Does that make sense? So we have mass.
Do you mean the physical direction or the direction of our thought to where we're going?
It's a little of both, but it's really a physical direction of force. So if we are mass, and how we use our muscles is the acceleration part of our mass. So mass times acceleration equals force. Force always has direction and magnitude. It's a vector quality, right? So if we think of magnitude, that would be like, how lightly we touch or how firmly, right? It's magnitude is sort of the amount of energy we're using. But what I find more specifically interesting, especially when it comes to balance, is the direction we give with our body. So the direction, if we're applying force, and especially if we're squeezing our legs straight into the side of the horse, where are we directing force? We're directing force almost against the sides of the horse in a left, right, or lateral plane. Mm-hmm. But what we really want is for the horse to go forward, which is a totally different direction.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Right. And so the horse, who's highly sensitive on their sides, might back up because they're kind of flipping us the bird going, that ring, you know, I don't know what you mean, but that kind of sucks. Right.
Sucks big time.
Right. And basically, we keep after them. It's a negative reinforcement. So we can keep, you know, applying legs and spurs and whip until they figure out that what we want is forward. But there's nothing dynamic about that. It's sort of like guessing. The horse has to guess what
it's kind of like the thought kick to go, pull reins to stop.
Right. So yeah. Kick
I think
to go.
Moved, that's
what and my question is not to say it's bad. Like I don't want to say it's bad to kick to go, pull to stop. But if we really think about how we use the forces that are generated by our body when we ride, kick to go, pull to stop, kicking kind of implies a direction of force left and right, inward to the body, and pull to stop is a backwards force applied to a forward going force, right? And I think when we ride better, we realize that we can resist forward acceleration of the horse without generating a backwards force.
Yes.
Right. So it's just like when we drive our car, we don't come up to the stop sign and throw it in reverse. We resist acceleration, but we stay traveling in the same direction. So whether we do that at 5 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour doesn't matter. We're never throwing our car in reverse or changing the direction
of force.
Of yeah. force. Right. Opposing the direction of force.
Oh, I like that better. Opposing it.
Yeah. And if somebody opposes our direction of motion, how do you feel about that?
I usually push against it.
Yeah. That's what we all do, including horses.
Yeah.
It gives us a sense of being restricted. So we leverage forward more against that directly opposing force. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what I looked up about types of muscle contraction, and this is in your wheelhouse as a body worker, much more than mine, but the only types, and you could tell me if I'm wrong on this, but all I could find were four essential types of muscular contraction, which were concentric, eccentric, isometric, and isotonic. Do you have more to add to that, or does that kind of cover
there it? There can be something called a co-contraction where, say, the bicep and the tricep contract at the same time. And that might be considered eccentric. I'm not sure, but we consider that a co-contraction, which really shuts down the joint. You've pretty much closed off the joint.
So are the muscle fibers like both shortening?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that but would that be, was... so co-contraction, that makes sense. It would be like a double concentric
exactly.
contraction.
So you've got biomechanically on both sides, opposing muscles are both contracting at the same time.
Right.
And I wonder if we do that a lot. When we're giving aids.
Oh, yeah. What I think is it's the most instinctual reaction to any force that's exerted on our body is to go directly opposite the force that's being exerted on our body. That's just our instinct. That's what gets us into the action, reaction, pushing, pulling game with a mm-hmm. horse, right? So when so concentric types of contraction mean that the muscle fibers are shortening. So like when we show off our big guns, we're shortening the bicep muscle. An eccentric contraction would be like if we pushed against a door frame.
Right.
So we would lengthen the muscles to their fullest length and contract.
Yes.
I think most people think of muscle contraction always as a shortening activity. But I go,
I think we do that a lot. A lot of us, that's what we use. That's what we've been taught is a contraction.
Right. So here is a great way to feel how the muscle contraction directly influences the force of direction, or the direction of force. Sorry, said that backwards. So if I just put my hands on a table as I'm sitting here, if I shorten the muscles of my arms, my hands slide towards my torso. So I'm generating a direction of force towards my body. That's how we pull on the reins, right? But if I lengthen my arm muscles, the instant I think about lengthening my arm muscles, my hands begin to slide forward on the tabletop. So in other words, if I need rain resistance or a rain aid, if I lengthen my arms first and then contract, I don't pull.
It's not a backwards pull. Yeah.
It's not a backwards pull. It's not an opposing direction of force to the forward. Right. And the same thing, because we're vertical, if we need more strength, then we can go into our spine and our back and direct our body up and down on a vertical plane to lengthen every muscle in our body and then contract, which would be eccentric contraction. So it's not just in our arms, it's every muscle in our body. And so when I was playing with this, I went, oh, it's sort of like abduction and adduction. So adduction always means your limb is moving towards your center line. And abduction means your limb is moving away from your center line. And I went, concentric contraction draws inward in our body. And eccentric contraction pushes outward from our body.
It can.
That's how we direct force.
Yeah, we can. We have a choice.
Right.
And it can until we bring it to consciousness about how we're doing it, it's a subconscious mechanism.
And that's what I find when I work with riders and horses. Most horses that get labeled as hating the bit, hate rein contact, I need a bitless bridle, I need to ride on a loose rein, because the horse reacts with a busy mouth, or, you know, has a poor relationship, let's say, with the bit and the reins. Most of the time, when the rider is shortening the arm muscles or leaning the torso backwards or excessively pushing your heels down, all three of those uses in our reins, our seat, and our legs generate a directly opposing force to the forward motion. So it's the direction of force that I find the horses are objecting to way more than the magnitude or the feel of force on the reins. So if I have a forward direction in my body, especially through my arms and through the reins, I can shorten the reins and have quite a bit of pressure on the reins. And the horses don't seem to mind that. But as soon as I change that direction of force, game over. They want none of it.
They resist.
Right. So understanding how to control our muscle use helps us learn to control directions of force when we ride. And we are a force that always has direction and magnitude. So as we increase and decrease muscular energy or tone, that's the magnitude, more or less. But when we use concentric contraction, we're changing the direction versus when we use eccentric contraction.
Yes.
And then I learned isometric contractions just mean that your muscles are at a consistent length while contracting. That could be short or long, mm-hmm. right? And then isotonic means that the muscle is changing length, either shortening or lengthening. So in how we think about using our muscles, and even the organization of our skeleton, if we're rounding our back, I thought this was another fascinating thing for riders with hands on the table. If we round our back and exaggerate the thoracic curve, our hands pull backwards automatically just by making that change in our back. If we arch our lumbar forward, our hands pull backwards. I go, so if we're ahead of vertical, behind vertical, too round in the upper back or too hollow in the lower back, all of those uses of our body generate a direction of force that goes to the tail, not the nose.
It's a, in our language, it's a shortening. It's a pulling in.
Right.
It's a downward movement.
A downward backwards movement.
Downward backwards instead of the forward and up movement.
So I found if I lengthen the muscles of my back and balance my spine between flexion and extension, only then do my hands naturally push forward on the table.
And that makes total sense, because if you don't have that length in your spine, the automatic thing for your body to do is grab with arms and legs.
Right. So we think in terms of using legs and arms as our aids, but really the use of our axial skeleton is the primary director, is the primary direction of force that we are giving the horse.
Right. And we've mentioned this a lot. It's just, you know, riding a spine on a spine.
Yeah.
And that direction of force, if it's back and down, is shortening and we're getting smaller. But if we can access and, you know, stop that and redirect ourselves, it's a more of a forward and up, which is what we want the horse to do anyway.
Exactly. And that's the premise behind Alexander technique, is that we move forward and upward when we're in our best use, which is actually exactly the same for a horse. So a horse as a quadruped needs a little bit of extra help maintaining a stable central line of force that then travels in the directions of forward and upward. So when a horse lifts the back, you're equalizing the forward force with more upward force, or converting the part of the forward force into upward force. So those directions of force related to balance and more optimal use of the body mechanics, that direction of force is critical.
Huge.
We can't get there if we're generating left, right, and backwards and downward forces. We can't
get
there.
My horse won't go forward.
Right. And we're squishing them down and pushing them in, right?
Or we're sitting on our pockets and we're, my horse won't go forward.
Right. No, and then just for fun, if we actually get into the mechanics, I looked up different directions of muscles that muscles can move in our body internally, just for the rider, right? And I go, oh my God, there's abduction and adduction, which is towards the midline, away from the midline. There's flexion and extension, which is sort of the forward back or the opening of a joint, closing of a joint. There's hyperflexion and hyperextension. There's external, there's rotation, which is a circular movement of a muscle. Then there's external rotation and internal rotation, which means outward or inward circularly. Then there's circumduction, which is also a circular movement of the muscle. Then there's inversion, which is inward, and eversion, which is outward. Then there's plantar flexion, which is down, and dorsiflexion, which is up. And I go, there's no freaking way we can control every muscle in our body. And the same is for the horse. I go, we really have to think about the physics of it more than the mechanics.
I totally agree.
And the physics of it are related to specific directions, straight, forward, and upward. So we're reducing lateral dissipation of energy in our bodies as well as the horse's body. Right. So even with people you work with, we all have a habit of being one-sided or a little bit crooked or a little bit too much lateral bend. So we have to develop a sense of what straight really feels like.
Where's neutral?
Where's neutral? Between a horizontal flexion in the human spine, forward and back, a lateral flexion of the human spine side to side. And then, oh, by the way, has anybody heard about rotation, which is the twisting motion side to side, right? So all of that has to, how do I want to say, coalesce into a singular straight line of force down the middle of our axial skeleton.
Without being stiff.
Without being stiff. It's a force management. So we adapt in order to maintain it. If we stiffen, we actually lose it.
Exactly.
We have to adapt our body constantly with the goal of a singular line of force between the top of our head and the middle of our seat bones. That's as true off the horse when we're walking or sitting or standing as it is when we ride. But then when we ride, we have all this external force that's basically trying to disrupt our internal line of force.
And that's a real interesting point, because the language around move with your horse.
I don't know if we've talked about that on a podcast or not, but
just a little bit. That's a podcast within itself right there.
Yeah, because it's a huge topic, whether we move or don't move with the horse. But basically, what we sense as movement should really be for the singular purpose of adapting and readapting in order to keep a symmetrical straight line of force. So when we're getting forces, external forces against our body from the movement of the horse, we have to move. If we just move with whatever the horse throws at us, we will lose that central line of force instantly. So we move in a way to adapt around a stable central line of force in our bodies. And that stable line of force has to move forward and upward if we're off the horse. So when we're on the horse moves it forward and upward. Right?
We hope.
Ideally, a horse
ideally,
in balance.
Let's say that.
Right?
Let's say ideally. But I have one that doesn't.
We can very much control the direction of the force in our body. So we can control, we are a force. And through how we use our skeleton and our muscles, we can absolutely control direction and magnitude, no matter what the horse does underneath us. We can control that in our own body. If we don't understand how forces work, we could be generating, there's 360 degrees of direction from our bodies. So it could be a whole lot of things other than straight forward and upward.
Yes.
Right. And I don't really, yes. All of those I put in the category of not what I want.
Maybe let's keep it simple. Not what we want.
Everything other than straight forward and upward is not what I want.
Right. And always what comes to my mind is the surfer or the tightrope walker, because they are stabilizing their spine, but they're using arms, legs, joints, hips, knees. Those are the things that are moving.
Yeah. That's
to
why
stabilize this.
And the appendages or the appendicular skeleton is how we sort of have that counterweight or counter use to keep us stable when we're coping with strong external forces. Absolutely.
And I'm trying to think about how would we say that to riders that will what always comes to mind is the ponytail. balance. The head.
That would not be a straight line of force through my head. Yeah. And that's how, if we get too tight, that sort of like jiggly ankles, bouncing legs, unsteady hands, nodding the head, that comes from not adapting our body. So in that case, we might need to feel like we move more with the horse. But the movement that we consciously use or even unconsciously use is not to mirror the horse's dysfunction. It's to coordinate how we direct the force that is us on the back of a horse.
That's a really good point. I like that, the way you said that. That's the key.
Because can you imagine if you just took, oh, I have a picture somewhere of somebody with like a teddy bear, or people will put sacks of grain on a horse when they're starting them under saddle, right? That sack of grain is going to go exactly where the horse's motion throws it, right? So if we move with the horse, we're a little more likely to fall off or succumb to various directions of force that are generated by the horse. So we don't ride like that, right? And because we are a mass, when we intentionally move in a way that destabilizes our axial skeleton, we're actually now generating more force, right? So we're generating forces that are going in lots of directions other than straight, forward, and upward. So we actually make it harder for the horse to balance. Just like if you have a wiggly kid in a backpack, that's just a nightmare to try to carry a kid who's wiggling all over the place, right? Or if the kid, if I'm unbalanced and the kid keeps matching my movement, that weight and mass of another body just adds more, like sort of exaggerates centrifugal force, right? So we don't move with the horse with our bones. We can move with the horse with our soft tissues, but our bones have to maintain that stability in our axial skeleton. And then our muscle use has to support the directions of force that we want, or we are literally generating directions of force that act against balance.
Yes.
Right. So we can make a horse crooked. We can make a horse drop their back. We can make a horse tight in the front end or fall on the forehand by how we use our bodies. So I have one last tidbit. When I did my research, this was so cool. So this is from the Library of Congress, because I had to know, it popped up on the Google search. What is the strongest muscle in the human body?
There's, to my knowledge, there's two. The masseter.
Nailed it. A plus. Okay. And
the other ones that come to mind are the gastroc, the calf.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's high on the list too.
Okay. That really threw me. It caught me by surprise when they said the masseter is the strongest muscle.
You don't
want to
get bit
body.
By a human.
No.
So everybody knows the masseter muscle is in your jaw.
So describe, Miss Anatomy Wizard, describe where the masseter muscle is so I can feel it.
It's
in my
right
body.
Here on the side. It's
no, you can't point. It's a podcast. You have to describe.
Oh, sorry.
It.
So thank you. So on the side of your face, kind of below your cheekbones, it goes from the upper below, right above your teeth, down to your bottom jaw. And that's chewing.
Is it a vertical muscle or is it sort
yes.
of angled?
Could be a little angled, but think of it more as just up and down.
Up and down between the base of the skull, like under the eye bone, under the eye sockets,
under your cheekbones.
Under the cheekbones.
Going down to your bottom jaw.
To the bottom jaw.
It's the simplest way to explain it. It's what you use to mat.
To bite.
Bite and your chew your food.
So in talking about force, this fascinated me. It's the strongest muscle in the human body, and we can close our teeth with 55 pounds of force on our incisors and 200 pounds of force on our molars. I go, that is just a great example. Like when we ride, how we use our muscles in direction and magnitude is a massive amount of force. Like if we just think of biting something with our strongest muscle, I go, 200 pounds of force in my mouth. Who knew?
Well, yeah. And when I was a vet tech, the worst injuries are dog bites or any kind of a bite, because that masseter muscle can inflict internal damage that you can't even see.
Oh yeah. Punctures and ripping and
if you
tearing.
Just see a tiny little puncture, you think that's all there is. No, that pounds per square inch, that force.
That bruise is going to be a foot long.
It's deep. It's not just an external thing. Like you said, there's a lot of force created in all animals with the masseter muscle. All bites are, you know, a pretty serious deal.
I'd be curious to know how many pounds, like I'm sure different breeds of dogs can exert. I'm sure dogs in general and horses probably exert a lot more force than a human can. And I was amazed that we're capable of 55 to 200 pounds of force with our mouth.
I have to wear a night guard.
Yeah. That's actually how I
all my teeth.
I fractured teeth. Yes. Grinding them. And it makes you sort of like tongue in cheek a little bit, but watch the power of your words. Like what comes out of your mouth can have a lot of force.
Or even for riders, are you locking your jaw when you ride?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Are you locking your neck, locking your jaw, biting down, all of those sort of ways that we cope with force and tension? Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So just to recap, Newton's second law of motion states that force equals mass times acceleration. So we are mass because we have size and weight. And how we use our energy as a living being, specifically how fast or how slow we use our muscles, is related to acceleration, muscle velocity. And again, I'll repeat that Newton's second law of motion is a quantitative description of the changes that a force can produce on the motion of a body. So riders affect horses, period. We are not neutral up there.
That's what I'm constantly trying to find.
Yeah. So self, we talk about
constant. That's my only thought.
Yes. And we talk about self-carriage in horses, but we seldom talk about self-carriage in riders.
In the rider.
Mm-hmm. Right. So imbalances in the rider can concentrate a force by shifting our body weight a lot into our upper body. We can sit back and put a concentrated amount of body weight just in our seat, or we can really push on the stirrups and put a whole lot of force and body weight in the stirrups, which goes up to two tiny points on the horse's back. So you actually can increase pounds per square inch on the reins, on the horse's back directly in the seat, and on either side of the horse's withers through where the stirrups attach to the saddle. The
stirrup bars, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So even in Western saddles where the stirrups hang is still a small area. So it's a concentrated amount of force, which is why we can make horses sore depending on how we ride, or they move their body in a way to get away from that concentration of pressure. So how we distribute our body weight vertically is what makes us more neutral. That's the self-carriage of the rider. But we're still a force. So yes. Every green horse I've ever sat on, their first ride, they literally stagger.
Yes.
Under the weight of the rider. They have to learn how to cope with movement while they have this living, moving weight on their back and mass. So it's no small deal. And then the types of muscular contractions, and we can all play with this. Like I find just hands on a table help us really sense the direction of our entire body through our hands. So as we play with shortening our muscles, which is concentric contraction, we will always feel kind of a direction of force towards our body. When we play with lengthening our muscles or eccentric contraction, the direction is forward and away from us, and we can tighten as much as possible, but we still control the direction of force by lengthening our muscles. And then isometric holding is where we've maximized the lengthening of our muscles, but we can increase the power of the contraction. That's how we control direction while we add resistance, is that combination of isometric holding or isometric use. And isotonic, I had to kind of giggle because I go, oh yeah, that's what you do when you catch yourself pulling. The horse just added a lot of weight to the reins, and you automatically, intuitively, instinctually shorten your arms, and you go, ooh, I need the resistance, but I have to make myself push my arms forward, right? And lengthen my back. So those are the four types of muscle contraction that we use, which is directly related to how we direct our force as a body on the back of a horse. And then how quick or how slow is just the acceleration. That's the muscle velocity. Mm-hmm. How quickly through time does it happen? So I hope everybody found something useful talking about Newton's second law of motion and why. Just like I said, I always say, you don't have to do the math. You don't have to do the equations. Just to understand a little bit about Newton's laws of motion. This is what all of classical physics is based on. And these laws of motion apply directly to our experience of riding a horse. So when we start to just change our perspective a little bit, we might still use the same techniques, the same aids, but when we consider the reality, the physical reality of force management, force direction, force acceleration, magnitude, direction, all of that plays into how we specifically use our leg aids, our seat, our reins. And so a little bit of understanding can really change, have a huge impact, and change how we communicate with our horses.
Yeah, so for me, it boils down to, can I give an aid and still stay in my length and width?
Yeah. Can I give an aid in the direction of straight, forward, and upward?
Yes.
Can all of my aids work towards that singular focus of coalescing the forces of motion? Instead of ping-ponging and fighting the forces of motion, we channel the forces of motion into that specific direction. No matter the magnitude of force we use or the speed at which the horse is traveling, the direction is probably the most important part to understand when we're riding horses. Yes. And actually for bodies, that was what I learned from you in the Alexander technique. It's like, oh, forward and upward.
Yes.
All right, you guys, thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed it. Like, share, comment, subscribe, let us know. And we will be back, I think, next week with Newton's third law of motion and talk about that.
Be kind, everybody.
Yes, be kind and enjoy your day. Bye.